Good morning, everyone. We're going to get started. Happy St. Patrick's Day. We're very excited today to have with us Sheriff Eugene Conway, who is the Onondaga County Sheriff. And he began his law career in the Village of North Syracuse Police Department in 1977. In 1978, he joined the sheriff's office, where he worked through the ranks from deputy sheriff to captain of criminal investigations. During his service, he was assigned as a narcotics investigator to the Special Investigation Unit, supervisor of the Warrants Investigation Unit, and Road Patrol Watch Commander. In April 2002, he became the Chief of Police and Public Safety for the town of DeWitt Police, and in 2007, he served as a temporary capacity as the Chief of Police for the Village of East Syracuse. Sheriff Conway holds a bachelor's degree in public justice from the State University of New York at Oswego and has completed training with the United States Secret Service, United States Marshal Service, and the United States Department of Justice Drug Enforcement Administration. Wow, that was a mouthful. He is a member of numerous professional organizations and has served on very many boards. Please join me in welcoming the 61st Sheriff of Onondaga County, Eugene Conway.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you. And let me begin by wishing everyone a happy St. Patrick's Day. It's certainly a pleasure to be here before you this morning, and it is an absolute privilege to be your sheriff of Onondaga County. I was asked if I could speak about the first year in office, as well as this coming year, and then I think also I was asked to talk about the consensus report. Let me just begin by saying, when I assumed office, there are three departments in the sheriff's office. There is the police department, which you would normally see the patrol cars out on the streets, as well as the detectives. And then there is the custody department, which is the Justice Center, which I'm responsible for all of the people that are held at the Justice Center. And then there is our civil department, which goes out and serves subpoenas, conducts evictions, and things of a civil nature. Altogether, it's about 600 employees. And that would include non-sworn support people as well. So that's what I'm responsible by law, those three departments. And as you can imagine, with 600 employees, it certainly requires certainly more than my position in a leadership position. And so there are other command-level people, administrators. There is a chief of each of those departments as well as an undersheriff, and the undersheriff really serves in my position when I'm not in the office or when I'm away. And I mention this because it is so important that I was able to convince or ask people who have what I consider equally important capabilities and qualities that came with me to be part of my administration. Jason Casalia is the undersheriff. And Jason had a career with the town of Manlius Police Department. He was a captain upon his retirement. The chief of the police department is Joseph Cicerelli. And Chief Cicerelli came from the U.S. Marshal Service here in Syracuse, where he was an administrator. And the chief of the custody department is Esteban Gonzalez. He was the one person who remained in his position from the last administration. The chief of the civil department is Ken Andrews, and Ken came from the town of DeWitt both as a board member as well as the chief of the police commission and a business owner in his own right. Those gentlemen obviously are equally important to managing the sheriff's office as I am, and I thought it was important that you are aware of who the other command team is, who the command team is in the sheriff's office. The first thing I would like you to know that upon assuming office, we came into office after a previous administration that had been there for 20 years. And as I just mentioned, all but one of those command-level people either had retired or had left prior to us taking office. That is important to know because there was a very short or non-existent transition period. So when we assumed office, we had to get up to speed as quickly as possible. Most importantly, there was a budget for 2015, which was already set when we came into office. We did not have any role in formulating that budget, but we were tasked with living within that budget. And I'm pleased to say that amongst all the things that we needed to do in our first year in office, our ultimate purpose, our ultimate goal was to be within budget. And I am glad to say and to report to you that in our first year in office, we finished the year within budget, under budget. Again, we were under budget within our first year in office. And we are proud of that based on the fact that, again, that budget had already been put in place. And it took us certainly a short period of time to get acclimated to the operations of the sheriff's office after a previous administration of almost 20 years. That was our first course of business. Our second course of business was to bring our fleet back up to what I would call to be a operational or a standard type of operating procedure. That was done with the cooperation of the county legislature. We came up with a three-year plan for our vehicles. Obviously, the first year required the most amount of vehicles, but in a fleet operation, my experience has been you need to have a plan, and that plan needs to be certainly beyond 1 year. And so we came up with that three-year plan, and through the year, because of our operations being within budget, the county legislature approved that first-year plan, and they have now approved the second-year plan. And the third thing that was most important to us was to fill positions as they occurred, vacancies, both across the board, custody, police, and civil. It's important to know that unlike perhaps a normal place of employment, that if you have a vacancy or if someone leaves your place of employment, you get resumes, you interview people, you do some background, and then you hire them, and then within usually a couple weeks, they start with you. And that's not the way it is in police work. It's certainly not the way it is in custody work, because when we hire people, it's a very intensive background process. But these people are also required to go to academies, whether it's a police academy or a custody academy. And that's important to know, because when we hire someone and offer them employment, for the police officers, they start a 26-week police academy. For the custody people, it's a 12-week academy. And once they graduate, hopefully they graduate from that academy, they then go into what we call a field training officer program, which could be another 12 weeks. It could be up to almost 16 weeks, where what they've learned in the academy, they now practice under the guidance of a senior officer, either in the custody division or out in the street in the police department. So when you talk about hiring someone today, in March, it's almost December or January, especially on the police side, where we actually see that person in the role of a police officer out on the street. So that's important, because you almost have to plan 9 months ahead, 6 months ahead, when you have a vacancy, as to when you can then realize that person in that useful position of employment for us. Those were the things that were most important to us in the first year: being within budget, creating a new vehicle fleet plan, and filling vacancies. And we've been able to fill vacancies as they have occurred, again, which I think is important, within budget. I'm also, of those 600 employees, they are represented by four different collective bargaining agreements, four different unions. And that is important because in our first year, two of the largest unions, the custody and the police, were working without contract or working out of contract. And again, I'm pleased to say that by the end of 2015, both the police department and the custody department collective bargaining agreements were approved. And I think that's important to know, as far as, again, because I have to be aware of that when I prepare a budget each year as to, you know, what the personnel costs are going to be. So the police, the custody, the captain's union are all within budget. And as probably most of you know, now the non-sworn people, the CSEA people, are also within contract as well. This is all done while trying to conduct the day-to-day operations of those three departments. We see almost 10,000 people come through the doors of the Justice Center each year. 10,000 people. On a daily average, we're holding almost 600 people at the Justice Center, and together with cooperation from the Janesville Correctional Facility, which is not under my control, they are holding upwards of 100 people every day. The Justice Center itself was designed and built 20 years ago, and it was designed to hold approximately 700 to 750 people. But that's not ideal because we fall under the State Corrections Commission on Corrections for oversight, and we have a lot of rules that we need to follow, and many of those rules require keeping adults separate from minors, keeping females separate from males, and together with other restrictions is really a daily balancing act as to where we hold those people and how we hold them. Because the last thing I want to have happen is to be so full that we can't hold any more people, and then we have to send them to another agency. And I don't like doing that because that incurs a daily cost. That cost, similar to like a motel, is upwards of $100, $150 a day. And so that is an added cost that obviously we work very hard every day to try to avoid. And we're trying to do this without having to build any additional facilities. So it is a balancing act. We've been successful through 2015, and together with the cooperation of the administration up at Janesville, we work together every single day so that we can maintain being within budget, holding people here in Onondaga County, and avoid having to send them out to another agency to incur a daily cost. We had a lot of goals for 2015, and obviously we didn't fulfill all those goals, and those goals were carried over into 2016. I came from an agency in the town of DeWitt, which strived for excellence. And striving for excellence can be many things, but one thing to me it means is adhering to standards, and adhering to standards usually involves an accreditation process. And while there are many agencies in New York State that are what is called New York State accreditation, meaning they adhere to standards set by New York State, I believe that there is a higher standard to achieve. And there is. There is a national. There's an international standard of accreditation for police departments, and it's called CALEA. There are 300 agencies in New York State, police agencies in New York State. There are five at the moment that are CALEA accredited, upwards of 400 standards that a police department must maintain on a daily basis, and they are subject to assessments. And those people will come in on a regular basis, and they will assess you to see if you're adhering to those standards. And I'm proud to say that before I left the town of DeWitt, we started that process of achieving CALEA accreditation, and in one more week, while I am not there and there is a new chief, the town of DeWitt will be receiving CALEA accreditation at a conference out in St. Louis. They will become only the sixth police agency in New York State to have CALEA accreditation status. One of those other agencies was the town of Manlius. And as you heard me say earlier, my undersheriff is from the town of Manlius. And he is a CALEA assessor. Travels around the country assessing these agencies, seeing if they're holding to best practices. We have already have a goal of the Onondaga County Sheriff's Office to be a CALEA accredited agency from its police department. And we will be the seventh agency in New York State to do that. It's a process that's long, it's involved, but I think it's necessary. I think it's necessary to show that we're always striving for excellence. But we're not stopping there. I mentioned that that's a police department. Custody department or corrections also have their own set of standards. They have their own accreditation. and the Sheriff's Department, Custody Department, is a New York State accredited agency as well. But again, that is not enough for me. It is not enough for our command team. We want to strive to achieve a higher standard. And so we are now in the process of achieving, through the American Jail Association, a national accreditation as well. And there are less than 5% of all the jails, all the correctional facilities in this country that achieve that status. And we have already had one team of assessors come in just about 3 weeks ago to do an initial assessment and to point out those things that we need to do to achieve that accreditation. And I am confident that I will be back here in front of you at some point mentioning that both the police department and the custody department have achieved national accreditation. So that is extremely important to us. I hope it's extremely important to the community. Those are just those are our two biggest goals going forward. Obviously, for me, there are many things that I would like to see us accomplish. I think it's important that we do more with youth in our community. And so I would like to see, and we will have, a teen academy through, sponsored through the Sheriff's Office. I think that's important. Our internship program needs to be much stronger than it has been in the past. So we are discussing and putting into place a very robust intern program for students, whether they are high school or college, to come and certainly assist us in our daily operations while learning the operations and hopefully having a better understanding of being a police officer, in the hopes that that may help draw us some potential future candidates that we would certainly like to have join us. Over on the custody side, you may have heard me mention this a few weeks ago. We have what I consider, and certainly what the County Health Commissioner has described, as a public safety epidemic in our community, and that is the problem we're having with heroin. This is not specific to Syracuse. It's not specific to New York State. It is not a problem of only the poor or the rich, or if you live in the city of Syracuse, or you live in the town of Camillus, or if you're young or if you're old. It is throughout our community, and it is a problem. And it's a problem that is affecting us in many ways. As I said, we have almost 10,000 people come through the doors of the Justice Center each year. Many of those people that are coming through having been arrested as a result of a drug problem, a drug addiction. And for me, and for you as a community member, it costs more than $200 a day to house a person at the Justice Center. So if it's a cost issue, I can say this is costing us a lot of money to house people who are coming into the facility each day with a drug problem, and a drug problem that's being fueled by crime. We also have seen in our community where people who are either high on drugs or on their way to get those drugs are killing other people. I think it was just a year ago, coming up this summer, where the lady was leaving her home in Camillus, and she was on her way to visit someone, I believe, on Casson Road, and a car hits her after crossing the center stripe head-on and kills her. He was high on heroin. This is affecting us just in how we travel through our community. So it's a problem. What do we do about it? And I have come out and said that I would want to do whatever I can in my position as sheriff, certainly in the enforcement end, and certainly we will continue our enforcement for those people who traffic and profit in drugs that are killing our people. Absolutely. We work daily with the Drug Enforcement Administration because we know these drugs are not just coming from someplace in Onondaga County. But beyond that, I think it's important that we recognize that not everybody that's on drugs is a criminal. We know that there are people who are coming to us using heroin that started some other way. And I would let the medical community speak to how that is happening. But the fact is it's real and it's here. So in my position as sheriff, while these people are incarcerated, and there are programs out there, and I like those programs, and I want to see those programs implemented here in Onondaga County, where we provide someone who's incarcerated the opportunity while they're incarcerated to begin that road to recovery. And that involves what's called Vivitrol. And as done in Albany County, that candidate who's incarcerated, who wants to voluntarily get off this drug of heroin, can begin to do that while they're incarcerated. Because we know that so many times when someone is released from jail that has a drug problem, the day after they get out of jail, they're going to look to find that drug again. And that only continues to repeat this pattern of crime, death that we're seeing. And so together with the county health commissioner and treatment providers in this community, I hope to be able to help facilitate these people who want to help themselves begin to do that. Because while they're incarcerated, they can't get the drug. And so we hope to help bridge that gap when they're released. Because this drug is good for 30 days. It's an opiate blocker is what it is. And you get that injection for 30 days. The medical community has said people don't crave for this drug. So that's one opportunity so that when they get released, they can go right into treatment and counseling and hopefully be on the path to recovery. And that's something that is a goal for me this year for us to incorporate as a program coming out of custody. But we have many other issues in our community, as you're well aware of, and we need to do that, and we need to do that collectively. And that brings me to my next topic of consolidation and cooperation, doing things in a collaborative way. I actually was a part of consolidation with the town of DeWitt Police, if you recall. The town of DeWitt is now combined with the Village of East Syracuse Police Department, and that began actually the day that I took office as sheriff. But it took about a year and a half of planning. It took two votes from the Village of East Syracuse citizens for that to happen, but it has. And so I have actually experienced consolidation from a law enforcement perspective. Can it happen? Absolutely it can happen. But I believe it has to happen the right way. And more importantly, I believe that you as a community member have as much information about consolidation when it comes to law enforcement as necessary, because it does affect you. And so one of the things that I've been talking about is all the things that we in law enforcement in this community are doing already in a consolidated way. The Center for Forensic Sciences, which is downtown, processes all of the evidence for all of the police agencies in Onondaga County. And as a result, they don't even have to have police officers anymore. It's all done by civilians. That is an example of consolidation. 20 years ago, I was part of an agreement that spoke to victims of child and sexual abuse in this community, where they would not be traumatized over and over again by continuing to be interviewed by different law enforcement people. And it was called the Combined Abused Persons Unit. 20 years ago, that agreement was signed. And here we are 20 years later. County sheriff's detectives and city police detectives sit in the same office area together with victim advocates, the McMahon-Ryan Center, Vera House. 20 years later, that is an example of consolidation. But it goes beyond that. Areas which you may not be aware of. We have a warrants unit that goes out and finds people who are wanted on crimes. Those people work together with the U.S. Marshals Service and other agencies on a daily basis in the same office. They work out of the same office. Our drug unit, as I mentioned earlier, should not be solely working by itself, because we know drugs comes from so many different areas and goes beyond boundaries that we are responsible for. Those detectives within the Sheriff's Department who work in drug investigations work together with state and federal agencies out of one office, and that has been in existence for years. These are just some of the examples of what we're already doing together in a consolidated effort to try to serve the public the best way we can. But regardless of a consolidation study, and I know there has been many of them, I feel that in my role as sheriff, just as I felt in my role as the chief of police for the town of DeWitt, that I should be doing what I can every single day when it comes to being efficient and effective. Because whether I was the chief of police in the town of DeWitt or as your sheriff, I am spending taxpayer dollars, and I realize that. And I know how important that is. I receive a tax bill as well. And so each and every day, I'm looking for a new opportunity or a continued opportunity or a way to make something stronger that is already in existence for the benefit of the community so that we can continue to be effective in public service as law enforcement officers while being effective, efficient and effective. So I actually agreed to participate on the panel of consensus in the law enforcement aspect because this is how important I think this is. And I know that, you know, people have had questions, and that is great. I love questions. I love the opportunity to come before groups such as yourself and help share my almost 40 years of experience in law enforcement in this community. And obviously I continue to do it because I care deeply about the community that I serve in, and I care deeply about the profession that I'm in. And that's what causes me to get up every day, come in and have that kind of enthusiasm, that kind of passion to try to make and continue to make our community as safe as it can be, because it does affect all of us. Just yesterday, I had the pleasure of delivering meals for Meals on Wheels up in the North Area Meals on Wheels. And we were in the Liverpool area, and I rode with a couple who have been doing this for Meals on Wheels up there for almost 10 years. And while we were traveling between each house to drop off the meal, they were sharing with me their experience and something that they were a little bit concerned about, or maybe more than a little bit concerned about, was the fact that this couple who have been doing it for several years are in their 60s, and they are the youngest volunteers in that program. And they are concerned that being the youngest, and obviously those people older than them, what's going to happen when those people are no longer able to deliver meals to people that I saw yesterday certainly were in need. And so I say this because of our community, and as I mentioned earlier, our internship program, and trying to get kids to come in and be seasonal employees so that they can better understand who it is that makes up our community and what we need to do every single day to try not to forget them.
Top of the morning to you, first off.
Thank you.
As a Packy Corbett, Dylan Walsh, we've had a few Irishmen in that office of sheriff. I don't know whether that's part of the requirements in the resume.
No.
Okay. My question has to do with mental health, the fact that many people are in the justice center that have mental health problems. Up until the late 60s, when Rockefeller ordered the close of institutions, people that had mental health problems were taken care of, in many senses, 24 hours a day. Granted, some of the situations were not good how they were kept, but for others, it was really a way to live. We are now seeing people, I'm part of jail ministry, and I see people coming into the system who have committed crimes, but they don't have the mental capacity to know what they have done. And I'm not asking that you that these people not be cared for, but I am asking what can we do to better care for these people so that they never have the opportunity to commit a crime?
That's a great question, sir. I'm actually glad you asked that question.
Can I just also just add to it? And that is that there had been talk about having one more pod, and you were going to have 150 or however many people were going to be in that just for mental health. I think that if you're interested in cost effectiveness, that is not a very good idea.
I couldn't agree with you more, and I've actually come out with that statement that I couldn't agree with you more several months ago. Because as you may recall or may know, that this whole question of jail expansion was kind of left for the next sheriff to have an opinion on. And I took about 3 months to research the matter and get familiar with it, and then I came out with a position statement, which I certainly have shared with all of the legislators. And my position, I had three statements on that position. Number one, I don't feel that building another pod to house people who have mental health issues is the proper course of action, because I have deputy sheriffs in the jail. And while we have a contract with an agency that provides mental health services, I don't believe that still is the setting for people who have mental health issues. It's still a jail setting. It is not the appropriate setting for them. We need to find the attention or the resources or the dollars, I believe, to identify these people who have mental health issues before they commit a crime, before that causes them to come through the doors of the Justice Center. Because the Justice Center, as well as the people try to do it, is not the proper setting for someone who has mental health issues. I will give you a perfect example of that that got me so upset that I started writing letters to senators and assembly people very quickly. Had a young man, I won't name his full name, but his name was Mike, lives in Liverpool, lived with his father, his parents are separated, and had numerous issues, obviously, as a result of his mental health, acting out other issues. And so one day I find out that he has been arrested, and he's been arrested by the state police and taken before the judge. And the charge was that he had damaged the home that he lived in with his father, so criminal mischief. So he's taken before the judge. The judge puts a bail on him of like $5,000 and sends him to the Justice Center to have a mental health exam. Now, I know that this young man couldn't post $5 bail, let alone $5,000. So he comes into the Justice Center, and obviously he has issues that require needs well beyond what the Justice Center setting could provide for him, to the point where we had to constantly watch this young man. And within 3 days, I had deputies who work in the jail come to me and say, "Sheriff, this young man doesn't belong here. We don't care if he was, alleged to have committed a crime. This is not the setting for him based on his condition." So then what I call the circle started, where he needs to go back to court. He needs to have the mental exam. All these things, as you would understand, are a week later, or 2 weeks later, or a court date. So I'm starting to track this, and I'm continuing to watch this young man diminish while in the Justice Center. And so finally I called the judge, and the judge said, "Sheriff, I'm sorry, that's all I really could do within my power." Okay, I already knew that. Long story short, 2 weeks goes by, 4 weeks goes by, he's still, every day when I come in, I'm asking, "How is Mike doing today?" So I write to the legislators, I write to the county executive. This is wrong. This young man doesn't be there. Who's advocating for him? Why is he still in this jail setting when he needs treatment, he needs help? So 30 days goes by, 40 days goes by. Now someone from the New York State comes in. Because when the judge first set bail on him, he brought him back in a week later and he said, "I'm dismissing the charges, but I'm committing him to the state office of, it's called OPPDW, it's a state office for people with mental health needs. I'm committing him to the care and custody of that commissioner." I'm thinking, this is wonderful. Okay, when, he's going to be leaving tomorrow, right? Well, no, we have to come in, we have to assess, do an assessment of him. Now we're 45 days. We're approaching 50 days. I've had enough. I reach out to the senators and the assembly people who are responsible for where he lives and this county. And I write to them, and I say, he's been committed to this commissioner, but yet it's almost 60 days later, he's sitting in this justice center. It's not helping him. He's diminishing. A week later, all of a sudden, the second assessment team comes in. Now things have changed. Oh, we think we have a bed for him someplace. Really? Okay. The point of the story is that here's a classic example of someone who needs help in our community, and because of the bureaucracy, he sits in a jail for more than 2 months. This is wrong. This is why I don't support expanding any room in the Justice Center for people with mental health needs, because I think that expansion money should be put into a treatment facility in this community where they go and get inpatient treatment or outpatient treatment, so that they don't have to commit a crime, or so they don't come back into the Justice Center and get caught in this circle. Jails are expensive. Expanding a jail is expensive. Someone said, well, if you add extra cells, you can basically rent them out to other agencies and have income. I'm not in the business of raising money as sheriff of Onondaga County, just as I was not in the business of raising money for the state of New York as the chief of police in DeWitt. I don't believe in ticket quotas. I don't believe in operating a hotel where we can generate income. That, I don't think, is my position, and that is a position that I take. And so to this point, we've been able to maintain the jail population without having to spend millions of dollars to expand or build a new jail.
I live in Camillus, and we have our own police department. The budget is about $2 million, I would imagine, probably 2.5. Other towns of the same size have no police department. Do they get a preponderance of your services, or is Camillus shortchanged, or what? Is there any way of getting credit to Camillus for the fact that it spends $2 million as far as the county budget would be concerned? And the second question is, what's your position on Metropolitan Police Force?
Well, the first question, I used to get that same question when I was the police chief in the town of DeWitt from the police commission members. You know, we never see a sheriff out here, chief. So I was aware of that when I became sheriff. There are services that are already, given to the town of Camillus Police Department. When our helicopter goes up, if the town of Camillus has a call that they need assistance, they get the helicopter. If they need a tactical team or SWAT team, because the town of Camillus doesn't have that, our SWAT team is there. If those Camillus officers have an investigation where they need a canine, since they don't have canine, they get a canine. Those are some of the daily services that are available and we provide to them on a daily basis. As far as when it comes to other services, we do put a car out into the west area where the town of Camillus is. So that, together with other services that the county provides, when someone's arrested, they're taken down to the jail. That jail facility holds people arrested from any of the town PDs, city PD, village PDs. But are there additional things we could do? Probably in the area of patrol services is what would most be applicable. The second question, how do I feel about Metropolitan Police? If this was a clean slate and we were starting from new, would a Metropolitan Police Department probably be the best way? I would say so, yes, if it was a clean slate. But we are not in that situation, as you know. We have existing departments right now. And again, going back to the Village v. Syracuse, the first time that vote went down was I heard from people who were adamant. They wanted their own police officers in that village. They were adamant when that merger went through that those same police officers would be in the village taking those calls. So some places, residents want their own police department, and I respect that.
Some months ago, 16 and 17-year-olds were being held in custody at Jamesville, and they've been transitioned back downtown. And there was reports of excessive solitary confinement in Jamesville, and I'm wondering how the transition is going and whether or not you've been able to minimize solitary confinement for young people.
Thank you. Yes, those young people were brought down from Janesville, and they had actually been at the Justice Center years ago, I understand, before me, and then went up to Janesville and now have returned. Just a comment about, you know, solitary confinement. The area of the Justice Center where people are held, this housing pod, is called a direct supervision. And it's important to know that because it's actually one deputy that supervises or overlooks up to 60 inmates. The days of a jail cells where you walk down a hallway and, you know, banged on each cell to make sure everybody was okay are gone, at least here in Onondaga County. So when you walk into that housing unit, you can literally look up, because it's two levels, and see the doors on every single cell. Like in any setting, as I said, we have upwards of 600 people, 600 inmates on a daily basis. It's important that we have order. It's important that people behave. We have a mix of people who don't want to be there to start with. And so we have to be very careful, and we are very careful about seeing that we maintain order, and it's an orderly a function each day. And so it's like anything. There are rules. And if people follow the rules, then it's done in an orderly fashion. But when there aren't, we don't deprive anyone who may be misbehaving from any other services that they may want. We offer between 20 and 25 programs to inmates who are in the Justice Center. And they range, and they are voluntary, but they are there for them, for those programs. So those programs are available to them each and every day through partnerships from the Syracuse School District and other agencies and other organizations who come in and obviously try to help these people while they're incarcerated move on with their life.
Nationally, we have, and I see Chief Fowler over there, nationally we have a apparent distrust of policing and police, and I have personally taken it upon myself to say thank you for your service when I see an officer out on the streets and so forth. Have you any indication of what the public attitude is locally with respect to policing and the local community?
Well, I certainly hope it's positive, and that's what we try to work on every day. We try to work on ways to have more positive interactions with the community, because I think that is our best resource to having a strong community police partnership. And so some of the things that I mentioned earlier in my comments about, you know, a teen academy, having interns, those opportunities where we can bring certainly our youth together in a law enforcement setting that's not a confrontational setting, I believe really speaks volumes to building on that trust, that respect that not only we would want from the community, but the community would want from us as well. And so programs such as school resource officers or DARE officers are extremely important, I believe. But unfortunately, when budgets become tough, they're the first programs to be cut. So I think right now we are down to 4 school resource officers in all of Onondaga County. And I know it's difficult even for the schools to be able to afford that expense of having a school resource officer. So this is kind of the catch-22 of we want to improve relations. We want to do it in a setting that's already not confrontational. But so many times those are the first programs to be cut or to be left out of the budget. And so that's why we're trying to encourage those types of settings where we can do it on a volunteer basis, or we don't have to be at risk of a budget cut to have that type of program go away.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Linda Hall, retired from the Onondaga County Human Rights Commission, and was there for about 16 years. And one of the first cases that I got confronted with, we did quite a bit of investigation in the Justice Center. And one of the first cases we got was a poor man who had been in an altercation. He'd been arrested. And in the altercation, he had been beaten with a golf club in his face. So these bones were shattered. And he had been medically treated, sent back to the jail, and he was given aspirin for his pain. So he was beaten, he was given aspirin, and we got a call from him on a Thursday or Friday, and he had said he was in a massive amount of pain, he wasn't being given any painkiller, he needed some help. So we went over to respond to the call, and at that time, Human Rights had a relationship with the jail. We used to go in immediately upon getting calls. In fact, it was our practice to go in immediately on medical calls because, well, as many calls as we could, because we knew that Monday through Friday was the best care. And on Saturday, people went home for the weekend, so we wanted to make sure this guy got taken care of as quickly as possible. And we went over and met with a group, which included health as well as health, was health department and the members of the custody division, and talked about this man's case. And they explained to us how they couldn't give him painkiller, you know, because they don't want him getting high in the jail. Well, we explained this was a little bit beyond that. And then come to find out he was a diabetic and had asked, well, is he type 1 or type 2? What's his treatment plan? And they didn't know the answers to those questions and said they had been medicating him even though they didn't know what kind of diabetic he was. So with pressure from us, the health department and custody division decided to move him into the hospital immediately, where he was put on intravenous antibiotic, and they changed his treatment plan to address his diabetic issues. Now, I never met this man, but that was an example of some of the work that was done while I was there. In recent conversation, I'm finding out that many of the services that are offered in the custody division of the jail are now subcontracted out, and also that the Human Rights Commission is not as welcome into the jail to do immediate investigations when they receive these types of calls. So I'm interested from your perspective, because unfortunately I wasn't called by you to find out what your side of this was, nor am I in that role. You know, how is this being handled? Are you working with the Human Rights Commission? Are you allowing them to come and investigate these cases? Because it's not so much of an adversarial role as it was, I must say, lastly, with Tony Callisto, but with each of the heads of the Justice Center while I was in that position, we had a very close working relationship. And part of that relationship was built on the understanding that we all had the same last name. We were all part of Onondaga County. And if I could help a man or woman in the jail get the proper treatment so that just their legal issues could be dealt with, and not the other stuff that comes up, as you mentioned, about poverty or racism or whatever other type of oppression comes up, that the members of this community would be best served.
Thank you. Okay, well, thank you for that. Let me just first state that prior to becoming sheriff, and I think it's within the last 4 years, it's recent, the county has changed, and the medical coverage now is through a contract company, so it's not through Onondaga County employees as it previously was. And I think actually there is a second company, medical contract company, that's in there. The first one didn't work out. And so I am familiar with the CCS as the medical contract company that provides medical services to the inmates in the Justice Center. And they are overseen by a doctor. We provide many things as far as medical services in the Justice Center. There's a dentist that comes in, obviously people who have medical needs. We have had inmates who have come in that are pregnant and actually have delivered a child. We have had a terminally ill patient who's been in the Justice Center. We've had more than a couple of inmates who required chemo treatments. Kidney dialysis. So whatever those needs are medically, when that person comes into the Justice Center, we are obligated, obviously, to continue those services. And we do through the contracted medical company. Now, if the doctor or the nurse on duty determines that that amount of care cannot be given at the Justice Center, then that inmate is immediately transported up to one of the ERs, one of the hospitals. And then we stay up there, as we're required to do, for security reasons, for the length of time that that inmate may be hospitalized, which can be, it could be for a few hours. It's actually been for more than a couple weeks on some occasions. So that is our responsibility. That is how the county has decided to handle medical care for the inmates. When it comes to people coming in to see inmates, we don't deny anyone to come in and see an inmate, whatever the person, family member, lawyer, legal counsel, whatever it is. Obviously, like most places, we have rules and those times and those requirements of how you come in and when you come in. But we don't turn anyone away when it comes to wanting to see someone in the Justice Center for whatever the reason is. It's always, of course, within the parameters of how that can be done and when those hours are, because we do have so many things going on in the Justice Center on a daily basis, in an operational capacity. But to speak further to your question, and I mentioned this early on, we are under the guidance and oversight of the State Commission on Correction. So anytime any inmate has a grievance, that grievance is forwarded to the Commission on Corrections, and they investigate it as well as us investigating it. And they also come in and they do assessments, they do inspections, they do audits. They are very attentive to whatever that situation is, and many of our decisions are based on what the Commission of Corrections directs us to do.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Just to follow up on the custody side, seems we're having a problem here. But on the custody side, as it relates to drug people that come in that are overdosed or having issues with heroin, and I'm asking this question because I have a friend, a family friend, who just, there was an arrest last weekend, and I think being in custody is the best situation for this individual. But could you walk me and maybe us through what happens when someone that does, they are arrested, they present themselves downtown? How is that identified? And you talked about the opiate blocker. Is that, do you have to request that, or is it kind of an automatic standard procedure that this person would be engaged in that 30-day effort to help them?
Okay, great. When the person is first brought into the Justice Center, one of the very first things that happens is they are triaged by a nurse who are right down in the booking area where a person comes into the jail. And those nurses are on duty 24/7, so there's always a nurse to be able to triage a person. The problem with people who have ingested drugs is twofold. They usually don't want to tell us, and B, sometimes they don't even know what they've ingested and now what they're feeling the effects of. And this is problematic because the person comes in, they may be high, they may be lucid, they may be in all different states of their mind, and it's really the nurse that is trying to determine through that triage process what they've ingested, how long ago it was, what they're willing to tell us, because many times they aren't willing to divulge that they have taken a drug, an illegal drug. So that becomes very difficult for the nurse. And then it is the nurse together with the mental health person who may come down and determine whether that person goes into a constant watch situation, because we don't know their state of mind and we don't really know medically what they've taken. So therefore, they don't know how to treat it at that time. If they're in really bad shape, they will go right up to the ER. But again, those are decisions made by the nurse, overseen by the medical staff at the Justice Center. To the question of the Vivitrol, the Vivitrol is something that has been tried, although I understand it's been around for many, many years. It's being tried because people in the medical community feel, and there are other viewpoints on this with Suboxone and methadone and other treatment methods, but they feel that the Vivitrol is good in this kind of setting because it is an injection that lasts for upwards of 30 days. They can get repeat injections, but there is absolutely no craving at all once they're on this Vivitrol shot, and it is not addictive itself. So if you receive a shot of Vivitrol, you're not going to be addicted to Vivitrol because it's an opiate blocker. It's not really a drug. And so the premise is that you time giving this injection upon their release so that you maximize that 30 days. So you would give it perhaps 5 days before the release. They won't crave any drugs for upwards of 30 days, and that gives you time, together with a plan, to get them into treatment, and that treatment then obviously includes counseling. So that's what we're trying to work with right now here in Onondaga County with the different treatment providers as to their role in this, together with people in drug court, because drug court is another area where it's important for us to be in sync with, but it's all about the person's willingness to want to get off these drugs, and not everybody wants to, not everybody participates. So it's a volunteer program that we want to support, and the opiate blocker itself, at least for the first injection and maybe the second one, would come without a cost. So that's a further incentive to try to help these people who are in a setting where they're confined, obviously, and not on a drug, where they can continue on when they're released.
Morning, Gene.
Good morning.
I was glad to hear you give the statement about the Mike who was in the jail for so long, and I was glad to help you with that. I was late, so I don't know if maybe you talked about this before I got here, but I've spoken with you many, many times about the fact that the staff needs to be diversified, and I wanted to know what efforts you're taking beyond the normal efforts to make that happen. As I mentioned to you once before, I was stopped by a deputy, and I was treated incorrectly, and we cleared it up because I had the power to do that. But I think that if our staff looked more like me, or more females, or more Asians, or more Latinos, it would be a whole different approach to how things are done. So what is your plan, and what have you been doing?
Well, what we have been doing is we have been out actually trying to recruit. As everyone might or might not know, all of our positions are civil service positions. So unfortunately, everybody has to take an exam, whether it's for custody or a police exam or in the civil department. We are bound by those rules of civil service. So that requires an exam, and people have to sit for that exam. What we are trying to do is we are trying to encourage more people to take the exam. And so that's what we've been out trying to do. I know there was a custody exam that is just about to be given. There's going to be a police exam again a little bit later in the summer. And as recently as this week, we were out at one of the schools recruiting. But I know that's important for us to get as many places. But again, going back, Linda, it may have been before you walked in where I talked about the Teen Academy. I talked about, for the first time, getting some seasonal employees helping us through the summer. And that is another way for us to get young people in the community who might not otherwise have any exposure to law enforcement to be exposed to this and to help make them understand maybe it's a career path they may want to take, and then obviously assist them through the rest of either their schooling or into actually taking the exam. There are times when I wish that we did have the ability to hire without the civil service process, but that is a bigger push right now to get resolved. The people that we're trying to encourage, they would be young people in our community, whether they be 14 years old or 17 years old. Getting them exposure, I think, is the best way for them to make career decisions. I know for me, I was an intern when I was going to SUNY Oswego, and I actually interned with the city police, and I interned with the sheriff's department as well. It was a wonderful experience for me. I got exposure and helped me better understand what it was that I wanted to do.
Thank you very much, Sheriff, for spending an hour with us.